I will be discussing some work that we started this past year, so preliminary results related to soil factors and plant factors that can influence potassium availability as well as uptake. Before I start, I have a PhD student that is working on this, and he would have been here today, but he went back home for the holidays. Nana Kuzi, also I'd like to thank Gayla Morgan, Hunter, and Bob Nichols. All right, so we've heard a little bit about potassium the past few days. We have started seeing an increase in the reports of potassium deficiency symptoms across the Cotton Belt. And this would be real simple if our soil tests were indicating that we should be seeing these deficiency symptoms. So there was some work done in the mid-80s by Frank Kahns in Lubbock, where he also saw the same thing, where plant uptake was low. However, soil tests indicated that we should have had a sufficiency of potassium. There are several factors that can complicate this, not just soil factors. We can have interactions between the soil as well as the plant, and then also how are we applying that fertilizer, both the source of the potassium, the timing, the application method, whether or not it's a dry or liquid fertilizer. And one thing that Hunter alluded to earlier that I think is also true for potassium is that we have more modern cotton varieties. And we don't know necessarily that the nutrient demands of those varieties, are they still the same as what we determined back in the late 80s, early 90s? I would assume not, especially because our yield potentials are so much greater for our more modern varieties. So first we'll talk about soil factors. Potassium, there are several different pools of potassium. What we consider plant available would be that soluble potassium or the exchangeable potassium, but we also have what we call fixed potassium and our mineral potassium. Our mineral potassium, depending on the mineralogy of your soil, is going to release at different rates. Fixed potassium is that potassium that's in the inner layer space, and it is actually considered somewhat unavailable, especially during the growing season. It has a very slow equilibrium between those pools. The exchangeable potassium is related to the cation exchange capacity. So if you have a low cation exchange capacity, your deficiency symptoms are going to be more likely to occur. Your soil doesn't have the ability to supply that potassium once it's taken up from that soluble plant-available pool. So all of these factors kind of intertangle, make it very difficult for us to really get a grasp of why we're seeing these responses to potassium or why we're seeing deficiency symptoms whenever our soil tests are indicating that we should have sufficient potassium and should not see that response. Another thing that I've started to notice too is subsoil K. So we take our soil samples in that 0 to 6 inch depth, maybe some of us 0 to 12 inch depth. What we're seeing, at least in the Lubbock area in the southern high plains, is that we have a pretty big drop in potassium levels once we get down to that 12 to 24 inch range. And when the demands of the cotton plant of potassium really start peaking, we're 60, 70, 80 days after planting, and that root system is much more developed. We're likely down at that depth where our potassium levels are much lower. Also, soil temperature, soil moisture can both impact potassium uptake, most likely due to root growth. If we have a saturated soil, low oxygen levels, those roots aren't going to be as developed. Soil tills can also play a part in that, the structure of our soil. And these are those different pools that I was discussing. So we have soil solution K, exchangeable K, slowly exchangeable K, which would be fixed potassium, and then we have mineral potassium. The equilibrium between the plant available, which would include the soil solution K and exchangeable K, and the slowly exchangeable K, is a very slow. It can be anywhere from days to months. Our plant available K, in most cases, we're extracting with some sort of ammonium extractant. And that leads to my next topic. So when we talk about fixed potassium, we can have fixed potassium in those interlayer spaces of clay minerals, but we also have what we call wedge zones. Wedge zones are irregular spacing in between those 2-to-1 clay layers. And you can see it here in the picture. This would be considered a wedge zone. Well, that wedge zone, things like ammonium can get in and replace that potassium in those wedge zones, but this potassium is unavailable to plants. Those roots can't get in there and exchange calcium, magnesium, other basic cations, can't replace that potassium in those wedge zones. And so if we're using an extractant like ammonium acetate or malic 3 or malic 1, it's possible that we are overestimating what's truly available in the soil to the plants if we're extracting that potassium that's in those wedge zones. So this graph is from Mullins and Burmester in 1990. How long has this been? 27 years now since this was published. We haven't really reevaluated the demands of our more modern cotton varieties. So who is to say that our modern cotton varieties aren't much higher? Do we have higher potassium demands than what this figure is showing? And how has that time changed? Do we have earlier potassium demands? So I really think that reevaluating our newer, our today's cotton varieties would be beneficial to understand what's going on. The objectives for the work that we've been doing is to determine the effect of application timing of injected liquid potassium coupled with irrigation level on several different cotton varieties and look at the impacts on cotton lint yield and quality, and also to evaluate or just try to better understand those soil factors that are affecting potassium availability. We had two locations, one down in Lamesa at AgCares. Here it's on subsurface drip. This was the first year that we grew cotton on the strip field. Previously it had been dry land. It's an Amarillo fine sandy loam. Then our second location was in Lubbock on an Olton clay loam, and it's furrow irrigated. Our treatments were replicated 6 times. We had rates of 0, 80, and 160 pounds per acre K. And I know Wayne's going to tell me that that's a really high rate of K, but we applied it as KTS, potassium thiosulfate, 0025, with 17% sulfur. The timings of those were pre-plant applied, side-dressed, and then we had a split application of potassium, 40% pre-plant and 60% side-dressed. And then irrigation high and low, but this was only for the Lamesa location where we were on subsurface drip. Soil samples were collected at 3 different depths, 0 to 6, 6 to 12, and 12 to 24 inches. We looked at pH, electrical conductivity. Macronutrients were extracted using Malic 3. Potassium was extracted using Malic 3, of course, but then we wanted to compare some different extractants. How do those potassium concentrations look with ammonium acetate, with Haney's H3A extracted that is supposed to mimic more of what the roots can take up and what's available to the roots. We also looked at potassium fixation potential. We used an incubation method for that, and we added some additional locations for this. Galen provided us some soil from Williamson and Wharton County, and then Hunter Frame provided some soil from Virginia. Our cotton varieties that we were looking at were all an early to mid variety. We used Delta Pine 1612, 1518, 1522, and 1321. But at Lamesa, we'll just be discussing these first two varieties. Now on to the soil characterization. So for AgCares Lamesa, like I said, we took samples to 24-inch depth. The pH at AgCares was on average about 7. And looking at the potassium levels, we range from 288 parts per million down to 246 parts per million in that deeper depth. The critical level, I think there's mixed feelings about that, but we range anywhere from 125 to 150 would be that critical level of potassium. So we're well above that. We definitely would not expect to see any sort of response in these soils based on our soil test levels. And the same thing for our Lubbock location, even greater concentrations, but we're starting to see that wider range of potassium concentrations at Lubbock like we have in other locations. Moving on to results. So remember, based on our soil test levels at La Mesa and at Lubbock, we did not expect to see any response. This is the AgCares yield for Delta Pine 1612, and that's exactly what you're seeing. The green bars represent the low irrigation level, and the blue bars represent the high irrigation. We did not see a statistical response for Delta Pine 1612. We did have a hail event early July, so that may explain some of that, but the cotton really recovered very nicely. I forgot to point that out here. So July 16th, this would have been one day after the hail event, and then this is August 5th. You can really barely tell that we had such serious hail. It recovered nicely. All right, so 15-18, we did see a response, surprisingly. So what we have here, once again, the green bars are low irrigation. On the furthest left is our zero, and I didn't change my units there, 0 pounds per acre of potassium. And then as we move to the right, we increase the rate, and we also have these different application methods. So we have 80 pounds per acre pre-plant applied, 80 pounds per acre side dress, 80 pounds as a split application. And what I want to point out here is that both the side dress applications at both the rate did increase yield compared to our check, and about 350 pounds greater lint yield with those treatments. But under the high irrigation, it was the pre-plant application that where we really saw that significant increase in yield compared to the check. Moving on to our Lubbock location, we looked at 4 different varieties here, very similar trends. 15-18, we saw that response that we did in La Mesa, but not with the other varieties. 15-22 and 13-21, we really see somewhat similar trends, but we didn't see any significant differences between those treatments. Now for soil factors, looking at the different extraction methods, comparing malic 3 to ammonium acetate and H3A, consistently for both locations, our malic 3 resulted in the greatest concentration of potassium at 3 depths. Ammonium acetate was less than that malic 3, and then we have our H3A extractant that was less than the other two at the 3 depths. This red line represents our critical level of 150 parts per million. Same thing with Lubbock. The ammonium acetate was consistently less than the malic 3 as well as the H3A extractant. So another thing we wanted to do was look at the fixation potential. And really, very few differences between locations here. We have La Mesa, Lubbock, Wharton, Williamson, and Virginia. No differences between depths within for each of these locations. We ranged from 50 to about 52% potassium fixation potential for our La Mesa site. Greater differences here at Lubbock. For our other 3 locations, they were right around 60% fixation potential. And according to some references, once you get to that 60% range, you should start trying to account for that in your recommendation. So in summary, remember these are preliminary results. We intend to continue this research. But we do feel that there is a need to continue to investigate potassium. Why are we seeing this response? What is it our soil test that maybe needs to be reevaluated, recalibrated? Is it the demands of the cotton crop, or is there some soil factor that we're not accounting for? So Some of the observations we did determined that the side dress application seemed to be more optimum under a low irrigation. Pre-plant applications were optimum under high irrigations. We did see that variety response, so that's also something to continue to investigate. Some other soil factors that we'll look at is cation exchange capacity, soil mineral release, and definitely reevaluate that critical level. With that, thank you, and I can probably take one question. Yes, sir. We used a ammonium incubation, so replacing those exchange sites with ammonium. The method was Kassman. We followed his protocol. Yes.
Do you have any tissue data?
We do. I just don't have the data back yet, but we did collect leaf tissue samples.